You're listening to Drinking in the Garage podcast with your host, Jared Morris.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Drinking in the Garage. How's everybody doing out there today? It is a... Oh, there we go. I got to crack that one open there. Let's take a sip, see what it tastes like. Like heaven, baby, like heaven. Yes, it is a dreary Wednesday afternoon here in Houston, Texas. Well, just north of Houston, Texas. And this is typically how Houston slash Texas weather, living down here on the coast, and here in the coastal plains, what happens is we go through a period of freeze. It's cold as shit outside that you can cut glass with your nipples. Then it warms up. Not like a typical Texas summer where it's like 150 degrees outside and you can fry a egg out on the city sidewalk, but it heats up to about 65 to 70 degrees. And what this does is this brings, and I'm no scientist, so you can call bullshit on what I'm telling you right now. I might be blowing smoke up your ass and I don't even know. But basically what I get out of this, because this happens every year, is my assumption is once that cold wears off and we start getting more humidity in our atmosphere, that this pulls in moisture from the Gulf. Because if you look, it's not a front blowing in. If you look, a lot of this shit is coming in from the Gulf. And it's thunder, and it's lightning, and it's loud, and it's just flooding everywhere because this fucking place has become a concrete jungle. So, I get up this morning thinking that, hey, you know what? They're going to cancel work today. I'm not going to have to go in. Nope, we got to go in. And I trudge forward, and I'm driving down these backcountry roads, and I get turned around, and no, I didn't have another adventure like I did last week, but I'm telling you, it took me 45 minutes to get about 18 miles, because my place of work is 18 miles from my driveway. Because I got turned around. Hey, shit happens, right? But hey, here we are, dreary Wednesday afternoon. This is the Drinking in the Garage podcast. I told you I'm trying to, you know, keep up with these. It's been a while, going into last week, you know, like I said, 2 years almost. But we're going to keep it on going. I'm going to share life's greatest mysteries with you. Have a drink or two. Talk sports, talk life, music, whatever you want to talk about. I got some great feedback. There were people that, like, all of a sudden, I guess they subscribed to me, and it popped up on their screen. So I'm getting DMs, and hey, a new episode from Drinking. Yo, bro, I thought that shit was dead. I'm like, yeah, it was for a while, but damn it, it's fucking zombie-like, and it's resurrected, baby. It is back from the dead. Call me Lazarus. Anyway, we're gonna bullshit and have a little fun. Now, one thing that bothered me, and I kind of wanted to jump on here last night, but today's the only option that I have to do, you know, have about 20 minutes or so free time that I can actually get on here and talk to you about something that really bothered me yesterday. So, I'm watching this amazing footage on MLB.com, and it's Craig Biggio. He is basically narrating a video. It's a 3 minute long video of Billy Wagner. And I'm going to tell you right now, growing up as a Houston Astro fan, a lot of you know that I'm a big, big Astro fan. Growing up as an Astro fan, Billy Wagner was probably one of my very first guys that I really, really looked up to. He's a lefty. He was a pitcher. The dude was like my height, threw 100 miles an hour, had tree trunks for legs, and I wanted to be just like him. I wanted to throw a baseball like him. I wanted to freaking be built like him. I idolized the dude. I got his autograph. It's sitting right up here on my mantle, right here on my little bookshelf. Billy Wagner was the dude that I wanted to be. I wanted to, like, just, holy crap, go out there and throw 100 fucking miles an hour. Flame throw that shit. Throw it right past him. I remember specifically being in Chicago visiting my brother, and I threw such a fucking hissy fit because I didn't want to go to some, they were going somewhere, and I said, no, dude, I spent a month in Chicago, this is the summer of like 1998, I spent a month in Chicago with my brother, his mom, and his stepdad. In case you didn't know, we are half brothers. We have the same dad, different moms. But I went up there, and it was the greatest summer of my life. It is the summer that totally turned me into who I am today. I learned a lot. I got to experience a lot, and I grew up a lot. And this is the only time that I got to, I missed the Astros. I watched every single game growing up. I still watch every single game when I can. If I can, it's because I'm working or I have something else going on. But I still find time to catch a score here and there. And of course, this is back in the day of no cell phones. Dating myself here just a little bit, but yes, in 1998, you had bag phones. And you were just now starting to see those Nokia brick things come out. But you couldn't check any scores. Now, you had ESPN.com. And you had AOL Instant Messenger and all that other shit, and we'd spend hours on that. But that was also with a ding-ding-ding-ding dial-up. And I told my brother, I said, dude, I have got to go to the living room. I'm not going with y'all wherever the hell you're going. And I've got to see Billy Wagner. I've got to see the Astros versus the Arizona Diamondbacks. And I'll never forget, the Astros were up. They bring Wagner in. Wagner comes into the game. And I'll never forget, it's Kelly Stinnett at the plate. Wagner grooves a fastball that's low and outside to Kelly Stinnett. He reaches, hits it off the end of the bat, boom, right off his melon. Oh, my God. I was pissed. I was worried. I was scared. It was all in one motion. I wanted to reach through the TV and beat the shit out of Kelly Stinnett. Granted, it wasn't his fault, but my first reaction is like, dude, you just knocked out my freaking idol. He just took one to the back of the dome, and he's on the ground writhing in pain because you can't hit a fucking baseball right. That was my first inclination, my first thought. But I'll never forget it. Get back to Houston. I'm two or three days later, I fly back to Houston, and Wagner's on Sports Radio 610, the only sports market show at that time, and they're interviewing him about, hey, you know, how did it be? Everything good? He's coming off the DL, concussion symptoms, all that good stuff. He's back. He's back, and he goes on to lead the Astros back into the bullpen, into the playoffs again, where they end up getting bounced that year, once again, by the Atlanta Braves and fucking Walt Weiss. Let's fast forward. I never knew this. I never knew that Wagner broke his arm twice. He was originally a right-handed pitcher. He wrote right-handed, and he taught himself to throw left-handed because he didn't want to miss any part of the season. He basically took a baseball and taught himself how to pitch left-handed by throwing it into the back of a barn. That blew my mind, and that right there sealed the reason why this guy, to me, I put him even higher, on a higher pedestal. Holy shit, this guy is incredible. Fast forward to the last 9 years. Billy Wagner has fell short of the Hall of Fame. Granted, he has increased his voting percentage every single year, and he did not make it this year by 5 votes. 5 votes. Let me tell you something, folks. 5 votes from a bunch of dweebs who've never probably picked up a baseball bat in their lives, who never probably played catch. They're the gatekeepers into the Hall of Fame, and they keep probably one of the greatest closers of all time out of the Hall of Fame. One of the greatest. And I'm going to pull this up real quick. Da, 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 da. 5 votes. These morons, I don't understand it. You've got to be the dumbest morons on the face of the earth to not vote this guy in. Or you're living blinded and you're not going to allow him in the Hall of Fame because he's an Astro. Let me read you some stats. You tell me who is who. Player A wins above replacement, 28. Player B wins above replacement, 27.7. Player A, 61 wins, 75 losses. Player B, 47 wins, 40 losses. Player A, 2.87 ERA. Player B, 2.31 ERA. 1,035 games for player A with 601 saves. 853 games for player B with 422 saves. 1,089 innings pitched for player A, 903 for player B. Here is what really stands out. Remember, the lower your whip, the better it is. Player A and 1,089 innings pitched had 1,133 strikeouts with a 1.058 whip. Player B had 903 innings pitched, 1,196 strikeouts with a 0.998 whip. If you said player A was Billy Wagner, you're wrong. Player A is Trevor Hoffman, who's in the Hall of Fame. Player B is Billy Wagner. More strikeouts, less inning pitch, better whip, less saves though, better ERA, better win percentage, and his WAR is 0.3 off. Who the hell is the Baseball Writers Association of America are the biggest dipshits in the fucking history of the fucking sport. It is a downright absolute shit show that the Baseball Hall of Fame is, and they should be ashamed of themselves for allowing this shit to happen. Yes, I'll tell you how I really feel. What a crock of shit. I gotta have a drink to calm myself down. Because obviously we're dealing with a bunch of idiots. I'm flabbergasted by this. I cannot believe it. And that brings up another scenario. You have Bonds. You have Clemens. You have McGuire. You have Sosa. Canseco. They all deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. You know why they deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? Let me tell you why they deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. I don't give a shit about steroids. I don't give a shit about uppers. You have a guy like Babe Ruth who was a womanizer, drank, smoked, showed up to games, fucked up, in the Hall of Fame. Deservedly so. That's the era he played in. You have a racist and also possible murderer in Ty Cobb in the Hall of Fame. But you're not going to allow guys like Sosa, McGuire, Clemens. They all deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm sorry. Baseball choked away their fans in 1994 with the strike. It happened. Baseball choked away their fans. They had to get fans back in the seats. It was hurting. That's the only year that the World Series, I don't know, in a long, long-ass time, probably 100 years, did not play. I have a ball that has it stamped the 1994 World Series ball. It was never used. Bud Selig is the root of all the problems when it came to baseball. This moron, first off, by selling the Milwaukee Brewers, becoming commissioner, and then forcing the Astros into the AL, which looking back, now I'm okay with it. But back then, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? We gotta sit here, and we gotta go to play teams like the Yankees, and now I don't give a shit, because we beat the fuck out of them. But you know what else is like? I was like, I don't get to watch pitchers hit, damn it. No, looking back, now we got the Universal DH. I'm so happy we made that move. I don't think we win our World Series if we don't make that move. I don't think we have the dynasty that we have right now if we don't make that move. But the problem was Bud Selig. And Bud Selig said, I have to find a way. I have to find a way. I have to find a way to get fans back in the seat, to get viewership back up on television, to get radio ratings. People have to start talking. So what did he do? Here's what he did. He turned a blind eye. The home run chase happens in 1998. Baseball is back, baby. Guess what? Stands are full again. You've got primetime games with Bonds and Sosa both sitting at 60, and they're broadcasting these games live. They're cutting in, showing live at bats. This is exciting. I got to go to the Dome and see Sosa when he's sitting on 60. It was incredible. And I'll tell a story about that in a minute, too. A really interesting story about that, about how big a pricks baseball front offices can be. But holy cow, baseball's back, baby. But hey, reporters started pointing fingers. Hey, these guys are too big. Hey, he's just swatting at the baseball, like just flicking the wrist, and the thing's flying 400 feet. How's this possible? Oh, look, there's Android in the locker of Mark McGwire. Oh, my God, look, he's got terrible fucking back acne. Oh, my God, look. Sosa's legs are the size of a fucking redwood oak out in California. How is this possible? Oh, no, it's okay. But then, hey, guess what? Let's fast forward to 2005, 2006. Bam, we're pulling out the Mitchell Report, right? Now I give a shit. Why? Because people are dying. Now we've got kids that are on steroids in the high school level because they're seeing their idols, like these guys take steroids. And guess what happens? Oh, now we got to take this serious. So, hey, I'm Bud Selig, and I'm going to hire this ex-congressman, and he's going to go and he's going to produce the Mitchell Report. And it's going to name all these players, and it's going to make them look bad, and it's going to ruin their careers. It's going to ruin their legacy. You allowed it. You allowed it. You should be banished. Hell, Pete Rose deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. It was the era they played in. It was not frowned upon. So why are they paying the price right now when they were told to do it? Help, it makes sense. Somebody, please. I'm begging you. What can we do to make this better? Number one, get rid of the writers. They shouldn't be the ones that are voting. It should be former members. It should be members that are in the Hall of Fame now. They should have a voice on who gets in. They played with these guys. They know these guys. Even if Bonds didn't get busted with his steroids and the cream and the rubbing it on and everything else, guess what? Reporters disliked him because he disliked the reporters. So they carry their own agenda. They're like these political pundits that are on TV. They carry an agenda. And if they do not like you, they're not going to vote for you, no matter how you performed on the field. It's because they are sad, pathetic, freaking weak losers. That is why. It disgusts me. And let's go circle back to the Sosa thing. So my dad's working security for the Astros at this time. And this is a really popular time, right? We've got baseball's back, baby. The Astrodome is sold out. Boom. There's a hit, right? There's a hit. Sosa hits it. It's the record-breaking home run. A guy out there in the general admission area catches the ball. They have to drag him up, put him in the security office for his safety. People are trying to fight with him. So my dad goes in there and he says, "Sir, congratulations, you caught the ball." All right, great. Guess what? Hey, listen. You don't have to give this back. This is your ball. Now, they're going to have people come up here and they're going to try to pressure you in to giving it back. So here comes the Cubs personnel. They walk in. "Congratulations, buddy. You did a great job. Sammy's so happy. If you give it back, we'll take you down to the clubhouse. You can get a ball signed, a bat signed, maybe a jersey, and a picture of Sammy." And the guy says, "Hey, I need some time to think about it." "Okay, no problem. We'll give you some future tickets as well." Boom, walks out the door. They give him about 5 or 10 minutes. He looks at my dad and he goes, "What do I do? What do I do in this situation?" And my dad says, "You know what you do? You make the decision. It's your ball. You can turn around and you can probably pay your kids' college off with this thing. It's going to be worth a lot of money. You could buy yourself a new house. You could pay off your mortgage, pay off some cars, pay off some debt." He's like, "What's a bat and a ball going to do to you? Is that going to make your life better? You're an Astros fan. Are you even a Sammy Sosa fan? I mean, this is historical." And I says, "You know what, Sarge, you're right." So what happens is Cubs people come back in. He says, "No, I'm not selling." Now they start playing hardball. Now they become assholes. "Hey, you're going to give us that ball or else." Threatening. Oh, my dad said, no, you step out. Escort him to his car. It's pandemonium. People everywhere. He gets out of there safely. Goes to an auction a few weeks later. Sells the thing for $1 million. I don't know if it was a million or not. I can't remember. Lots of money. All I know is that he calls my dad. My dad gave him his card. He says, "Let me take you to lunch." He said, "I paid my mortgage off. I invested money, and I was able to put some back for my kids' college. Thank you for that advice. I really appreciate it." So moral of this story is, if you catch something, hang on to that. Because they're going to come sweet talk you. And I don't give a shit how big of a fan you are. Keep that shit. Sell it. Do something for yourself. Those guys can buy it from you. They make plenty. Anyways, I hope everybody stays dry out there. Wherever you're listening to this, hopefully you have better weather than we do. This thing's supposed to continue into the night and also into the morning. So hopefully the streets and the water will go down and I'll be able to make it to work tomorrow. If not, well, hell, guess I'll stay home. I guess I'll drink. Because remember, you can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning. Hope you guys have a great day. Rain, ring, go away. Wherever you're at, God bless you. I'll see you on down the road.